Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
Wisconsin's Midday News on WTMJ. We've got you till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Gina producing the program. Greg and Jessica with you. Thank you for being with us.
And now it's time for three big things on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one. The FBI is now offering a $10,000 reward for information that leads to the person responsible for shooting and killing a 12-year-old girl in Milwaukee this year. The agency just made the announcement today. The person fired numerous shots into a house near 73rd and Fairmount on June 13th. 12-year-old Marvea Darby was hit by one of those bullets while she was sleeping. She was hit in the head and killed. Investigators believe a silver or gray SUV may have been involved. Anyone with tips can call the Milwaukee Police Department, the FBI Milwaukee Field Office, or you can submit a tip online through the FBI. But once again, that is new today. The FBI now offering a $10,000 reward.
Number two, new details surrounding the Louvre heist, including a security lapse.
There were, we're told, not enough screens in the control room for the guards to view all the sensitive camera points simultaneously. That weakness was highlighted earlier this year in a museum audit, but not addressed. And check this, there were 5 audits of the Louvre over the last decade. This morning's review by a government watchdog said if police and private security guards had have been alerted just 30 seconds earlier, then they could have stopped the robbers escaping.
It probably should have read another security lapse instead of a security lapse. It seems to be one of many. That was ABC's Tom Sophie Burridge outside the museum. So to summarize, thieves were able to jack over $100 million worth of jewels from the Louvre due to unmonitored cameras.
Yeah, it's like a movie.
Insufficient equipment, obsolete equipment, security audits that were totally ignored, and weak passwords such as Louvre. That's the all-timer for me.
That's like almost worse than 12345.
I put an exclamation point or something at the end of it. At least 7 people have been arrested in total, including the Core 4. There was a Core 4 group that's all been arrested. They executed the daylight robbery on scooters. It's just unbelievable. There already has been a movie on this. We talk about movies and how they kind of play off of real-life scenarios. Well, the movie came out earlier, and that was Ocean's 11. The jewels, by the way, have not been found. People believe they've been melted down and resold, created into something totally different. You wouldn't even be able to recognize it.
Ocean's 11, by the way, so good. Number three, with next year's midterm elections less than a year away, President Trump has started hitting the road to talk about a key issue on voters' minds these days, affordability. CBS News correspondent Natalie Brand reports from the White House.
Recent CBS polling finds a disconnect between how President Trump talks about the economy and how Americans say they feel. Something Democrats are seizing on ahead of next year's midterm elections.
Donald Trump and Republicans have done nothing to lower the high cost of living. Housing costs, out of control. Electricity costs, out of control. Childcare costs, out of control.
Democratic leaders have also warned of rising health care premiums with enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies set to expire at the end of the year. On Thursday, the Senate will vote on dueling proposals to address the issue.
Senate Democrats have put forward a 3-year extension on the enhanced COVID-era tax credits. Republicans have an alternative proposal to replace the subsidies with government-funded health savings accounts. It's now 1:12. Coming up next, we'll hear from the voice of milk on that $12 billion aid package from the federal government. How much will it really help? Dairy farmers have been squeezed from all sides this year. Low prices, high costs, and fewer export opportunities. Now a new $12 billion aid package from the federal government aims to give them a little bit of breathing room. Chief Policy Officer for the Voice of Milk, Karen Geffer, joins us live with a reaction and to give us some inside perspective on what dairy farmers are going through right now. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
Is this bridge assistance big enough to make a difference, or does this only scratch the surface of the losses farmers have taken this year? Because when you hear $12 billion, that's a lot. But when you break it down and all the farmers who need it, what does it ultimately mean?
Well, I think, does it make farmers whole is the question, and the answer is no. When we look at the total impact of all of the disruptions that have occurred this year, we're looking at about a $40 billion economic loss for farmers. And so $12 billion, we'll call it as a start. It is a short-term solution, but it's not a long-term solution. So as we look forward, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act does have an increase in commodity reference prices that will take effect in mid-2026. And so that should help with some of the programs, indemnity programs moving forward. But between now and then, we really are farmers really are needing that bridge assistance.
So, Karen, how will this money be used? And was it an application process? Would maybe one dairy farm in Wisconsin apply for this and another saying, we're actually in pretty good shape, let others who are really in need go for it here? How does it work?
Good question. So this program was created by the current administration. It's paid for with money from the CCC, the Commodity Credit Corporation. And so that is a pot of money that's authorized by Congress whenever it's needed, whenever those funds become low. And essentially, the USDA secretary has authority to use those funds for disaster aid programs, for assistance programs, for whatever their discretion really is on when farmers might need it. So this program was created by the administration. The provisions specifically address row crops. So think oats, corn, soybeans, wheat, sunflower, your row crops. It does not include livestock. It does not include any other commodities like milk. And so what the USDA is going to do is they have a formula that will have a variety of different statistics, both for production of acres planted for 2025, as well as the commodity prices and some export information. They're going to put all of that data through a formula, and then they're going to come out with what a number that each of those covered commodities should receive per acre or per bushel, however they choose to do that. And then those payments won't come out until the end of February of 2026.
What are farmers, and specifically farmers here in Wisconsin, telling you about things like input costs and feed costs and whether they can even break even heading into next season?
Well, most farmers are definitely not breaking even. They are farming for a loss. And so when we look at the main contributors to how we are where we are, there's a couple things that we can point to. So we have significantly increased input prices, fertilizer, equipment, parts, machinery, and then we get to wages. Wages have gone up, so that's an additional expense. And then we look at our export markets. Those are really important for agriculture, and we have uncertainty in those markets. We have not been at the table as a country for way too many years, developing relationships and establishing bilateral and multilateral trade agreements. And so now we have an administration that is using the tactic of tariffs in order to bring countries to the table and negotiate those frameworks for exports and trade. And then we have, as a result, the commodity prices are tanking. They're going lower and lower as we look from January of 25 to current. And so that's really a perfect storm of how farmers are in the position that they're in. They are telling me that it is very challenging. They are appreciative of the package. It's not going to be a long-term solution, but it is something that they can point to when they have to go meet with their banker to put together their plans for the 2026 farming year.
You kind of walked me down the path of my next question here. You outlined a number of long-term economic challenges facing farmers here. Do you view it as more of a Band-Aid or something like this, while helpful, maybe has to be a year-after-year sort of thing, not just a one-and-done?
Well, I think we're going to have to see how commodity prices look. As we look at futures prices, things don't look really great moving into 2026. There are risk management programs that farmers should take a look at and look at enrolling in. But whether or not that is going to make them whole is going to depend on the operation. So we'll have to see how things move forward. The administration has maybe alluded to perhaps this bridge assistance program is the first tranche. of payments to help get farmers through to that implementation date for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
We're talking with Karen Gaffer, Chief Policy Officer for The Voice of Milk. And I'll be honest, Karen, that's just fun to say. You are with The Voice of Milk. Can you explain to our fans? Can you explain to our fans the connection between The Voice of Milk, Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative, and Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So we are an umbrella organization. We are we work together, Minnesota Milk, the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association, and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative. We work together. Our boards work together on a shared vision, strategic outlook, and policy. And so the Voice of Milk covers 9 states across the upper Midwest. And then we have specific policy and boards in both Wisconsin and Minnesota, specifically working with dairy farmers who ship their milk to a private processor. So if you think of Grande Cheese or a lot of other boutique cheesemakers in the state of Wisconsin and across the upper Midwest, those are the farmers that we serve.
Do you have any top policy priorities that Voice of Milk wants Congress or the administration to address after this?
Sure. So we sure would like to see a farm bill pass. That is definitely something that while the One Big Beautiful Bill Act had a lot of the provisions of the farm bill, there are a few that are kind of outstanding that have not been included. And we had an extension of the farm bill in the continuing resolution that happened last month. And that is at least some surety moving forward. But some changes are still needed for an updated farm bill. So that's something we're going to be working on 2026. And then I would say the other big one is labor. So dairy farmers are really struggling to find a reliable, consistent labor force. And under the current administration and the priorities they've set forward, that has gotten harder. So we are working with a number of other agricultural groups, coalition groups, to really look at what an opportunity and a pathway forward for a stable, reliable, cost-effective labor force looks like for agriculture and for dairy specifically.
So, Ken, it sounds like the general sentiment among dairy farmers in our community, in our state, regarding the package is that, thank you, this is helpful, maybe a chance to catch your breath for a minute, but, boy, there are so many challenges facing all of our farmers here in the state, as you outlined.
There are, and I think we are going to see as challenges continue to face our dairy farmers that that we're going to have to look at what other opportunities are out there. One of them being, you know, farmers are the ultimate innovator, and they are really so good at finding solutions when it just really looks like there isn't one. And so, you know, our dairy farmers have been using a beef on dairy type strategy where they're breeding their dairy cows to beef bulls. And so those offspring have a really high dollar value because beef is at a really good price right now. So that innovation in the dairy business has really been very helpful for dairy farmers weathering these low milk prices. And then the other thing we can look at and is an innovative approach would be this talk about greenhouse gases and carbon markets. So the Voice of Milk just launched a program called Empower Plus. And so that's a data-driven solution for farms to look at their greenhouse gas footprint and look at reducing that so that they could use that through the with their processor or through the value chain to help those value chain and customers meet their environmental commitments. So those are just two. I'm sure there are more out there and there will be more developed. So looking at diversification of revenue streams is going to be really important for not only dairy farmers, but a lot of farmers moving forward.
Without a doubt. That's Karen Gaffer, Chief Policy Officer for The Voice of Milk. Thanks so much for joining us, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
See, when you brought that up, I thought you were talking about the morning commute. So when I'm coming in, so west to east into downtown, and that's been fine. Getting out of downtown, like if you don't leave by 2 o'clock, like what in the world? It is so packed, jammed. Getting out of downtown from like, I don't know, wherever you get on the freeway, downtown to like, I don't know, the stadium. It's awful. It's terrible. Like, anytime after 2 o'clock, it's just brutal on that stretch of highway.
I've just kind of been getting off ahead of time. I'm like, nope, not going to do it. I'm going to go like this, and then I'm going to see, okay, yep, I can get back on.
Yeah, a lot of construction going on, and a lot to get to here with Lauren Larson covering the weather, and it's kind of an active system here with deep freeze, snow, sleet, snert from earlier in the week. Lauren Larson joins us on the line. Hi, Lauren.
Yeah, hey guys. It has been busy in the Weather Center for sure, and I really think everyone has been noticing just the constant snow chances here in the last couple weeks.
Well, and meaningful, right? I mean, even the dusting a couple of days ago was a little more than I expected. What happened last night seemed to come down in a hurry. It was kind of a sleety mess. I was coming home from one of my daughter's practices at about 6:30, and it was kind of a sleet fest, and it was getting slippery. And then by the time we woke up, it was that real hard and crusty sort of moisture-rich kind of snow. Definitely not the fluffy stuff.
Yes, definitely not the fluffy stuff. We were kind of right there on the rain and the snow. I kept checking outside because I feel like the radar didn't do the best job telling us what it looked like. So I would peek my head out, stick my arm out the outside in the parking lot, and yep, okay, it's snow. Okay, now it's rain again. And then when I left, it was falling as big snowflakes around 11 o'clock last night. So we kind of, especially in Milwaukee, went back and forth through there. But it was a different story for Fond du Lac County. We had some viewers email us telling us they got over 6 inches of snow. So they didn't really see that wet rain sleet kind of mix that we saw here in Milwaukee.
Well, and what we did see in Milwaukee is a little cause for concern with the temps that are dropping. I wonder if you're telling your fans this, because I was talking with DPW earlier this morning, and they said, you know, the crews were trying to get everything cleaned up before the slush freezes in place.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well. It was a little bit slippery last night, but I think it was more just because there was so much water on the roadways. But like you mentioned, this freeze that we have coming, even tonight, our temperatures will fall into the single digits. So not going to be pretty for any untreated surfaces and places where we're still seeing kind of this buildup of sleet and slush. It's going to be cold tonight, and then even colder as we look towards this weekend. The really deep freeze we've been talking about will be high temperatures in the single digits for Saturday and Sunday. And Saturday night into Sunday morning, we are expecting our first sub-zero temperature.
So how long does that last here, right? It's coming for the weekend, but does it move out of our system before too long?
Oh, yeah. It's not going to last forever. We are going to climb back above freezing through the middle of next week. So right now, those trends are looking towards 35, 36 degrees for next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
So we're talking about the cold, cold temps. And then what about the snow or flurries? When will we see that again?
Yeah, we're looking at that Thursday night into Friday morning, a chance. Right now, there isn't a lot of agreement as far as the model placement for this snow. Some models have it going further south and not impacting Milwaukee at all. Right now, your storm team forecast is looking about 1 inch of snow Thursday night into Friday morning.
It was noticeable, Lauren, when we were on the air yesterday, it was talking about this 12-hour duration of time with this winter weather advisory, and then we picked up Jefferson County, which made me think, oh boy, Waukesha is going to get involved in this as well, maybe even Milwaukee. And then they extended the advisory until 9 o'clock this morning, so it was a pretty meaningful snowfall and weather event.
Right, absolutely, and I think that's something that is good to note, because the original messaging that we were sharing was, you know, 1 inch of snow, maybe close to 3 inches for some of us. But sometimes the amount of snow isn't necessarily where you're seeing the biggest impacts. If it's falling hard and fast during those commute times, they're more likely to issue those weather advisories and winter storm warnings in those cases as well.
Okay, come Sunday for the big Packers game, Greg was looking at the forecast for Denver.
Oh, this is crazy.
Are you gonna be telling people that we have a high of like 9 on Sunday while Denver has a high of 62? Was it 62 or 63?
It's 62 and sunny in the middle of December.
Well, I would say we're lucky that it's not at Lambeau Field, because that would be not a miserable day at Lambeau, but pretty cold. So lucky for the Packers that they get to go out there and embrace the warmer air.
That would be one of those days up at Lambeau that you would be so thankful for the sun, at least, because at least the sun helps you mentally, but you'd have to have like the butt warmers, the hand warmers, maybe be standing on a little bit of cardboard. That really helps if it snows. I think that helps with insulation.
I definitely know. They heated everything in that situation. I did note that the Bears play Cleveland this weekend in Chicago, so I can't imagine Chicago's going to be much warmer or different than we are here, Lauren.
Right. No, they're experiencing the same kind of Arctic dip that we are. So a cold day for Chicago, too.
Good stuff. TMJ4 meteorologist Lauren Larson. Always appreciate it, Lauren. Thank you.
Thanks, Larson.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Take it easy. 144 on WTMJ. Larson joins us a few times a week here on Wisconsin's Midday News. Well, the Federal Reserve wrapping up its final two-day meeting of the year, announcing a benchmark rate dropping 0.25%. It's the third consecutive reduction for the central bank. Investopedia editor-in-chief Caleb Silver joins us on the line. Hey, Caleb, we've talked about this before. The markets indicate a resilient economy. What's driving the Fed's decision here?
Yeah, the Fed is trying to balance out this softness in the labor market with this inflation sort of anchored around 3% right now, a little higher than the Fed would like it to be, but it is sensitive to the fact that companies are starting to let go of workers, they're hiring less, and even though we haven't gotten recent or even that accurate of payrolls data from the government, we've been getting private payrolls data, and that's been telling us that companies are starting to lighten up their workforces as we go into 2026.
Caleb, this meeting sounded unusually tense. What do you know about that and the reasoning behind it all?
Well, there is a dissension among the Fed right now. There is the hawkish Fed governors that want interest rates to kind of remain where they are so we don't trigger another bout of inflation. And there are the ones that are more dovish that want lower interest rates to stimulate the economy, but also to lower the interest payments the U.S. has to make on its national debt, which is a heavy burden on the government. So there's this push-pull going on. And know that Fed Chair Powell's term does end next May. And the president has said he may name his candidate for the next Fed chair as soon as this Christmas. So we already have that drama at play as well. This will be, this will be Powell's last meeting of the year, and then he only has three more interest rate meetings before his term ends.
Mortgages make up the largest share of consumer debt, Caleb. How are those loans impacted?
Well, those loans are impacted by the Fed funds rate, which is what the Federal Reserve sets at its interest rate meeting every 6 weeks. But it's also set by, it's sensitive to the yield on the 10-year treasury. And the yield on the 10-year treasury, is the most widely held, most trusted asset on the planet. That's been sort of sticky highs. There's been doubts about the strength of the U.S. economy. So it's much more sensitive to that. The 30-year fix has been above 6% for a very long time, which has kept the housing market in a deep freeze. Maybe as interest rates come down after this meeting and into next year, as they're projected to do, that might loosen up interest rates on mortgages and reignite the housing market.
Just a moment ago, you were talking about the push and pull. I'm curious, how much pressure is Powell under to keep everyone on the committee together? And does that impact outcomes?
Well, he's the Fed chair. He gets all the attention because he has to face the press after every Fed decision, and he's in the spotlight. But the Federal Reserve is made up of governors and Fed presidents from around the country that represent their regional banks. So there's a lot of input from both the Fed governors and the members of the Federal Open Market Committee, all who have a vote on interest rates. It's not as if Powell decides this himself. He just has to find the consensus or go with what the majority vote is, and they talk about it in pour over data all the time. So it's not one man making the decision. It's an entire board of governors representing banks from around the country.
And Caleb, before we let you go, quick outlook for 2026. More reductions expected, or are we seeing more of a stable outlook for 2026?
If you look at the Fed summary of economic projections and the Fed's dot plot, which is the most boring yet the most important chart in economics right now, it shows that interest rates are probably headed down and to the right. Not dramatically so, but they could be a full percentage point lower by this time next year. So that's something to watch when we get those summary of economic projections after the Fed decision.
Investopedia editor-in-chief, always good to catch up with Caleb Silver. We appreciate it, Caleb. Thank you.
Thanks, Caleb.
Thank you.
A fast food holiday ad has backfired. In fact, McDonald's has even pulled the ad from YouTube, but we still have it, Greg.
Oh, geez. What did they do now?
You want to see this? Text watch to the WTMJ Talk and Text line to see the bad ad. And here's the thing. I'm really interested to find out if you think this is as bad as a lot of people think. Text watch to 855-616-1620. That's watch to 855-616-1620. And you can see the bad ad right here. We've got it playing for you. CBS's Deborah Rodriguez has the details.
It's the most terrible time of the year.
McDonald's has pulled an AI-generated Christmas commercial from YouTube after consumers deemed the satirical take distasteful. It featured a series of short, chaotic clips of people braving winter weather, getting stuck in tangled holiday lights, and burning homemade cookies.
I was in McDonald's till January's
here. The ad was created by an L.A. agency for McDonald's Netherlands. An American marketing expert tells the L.A. Times he suspects a very unhappy human came up with the idea. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Okay, so you got to have a little bit of a sense of humor. So these little clips look like most scenes in the movie Christmas Vacation, right? Things going wrong for the Griswold family. That's kind of what this is. The tree gets knocked over. The crazy aunt shows up. She's wearing too much makeup. Her gift is on fire and leaking. Like
the snow from the building above falls on top of you.
A collection of things going wrong for the holidays.
I'm not going to lie. I actually think it's kind of funny.
I think it's great.
I think it's a little relatable to some people, too. I mean, let's be honest. There are a lot of people who love the holidays, but there are also people who don't love the holidays. There are some people who feel like it's stressful and it's just a lot going on. I think it's kind of funny. So I don't know. I don't think it's terrible, but I've also read in other spots that a lot of people are upset with this because they used AI for it. And I think if you look very closely, you can definitely tell there's some scenes where, yeah, that looks like it was AI generated. I don't know though that everybody watching this, if you don't look real closely, is just going to assume it's AI.
Yeah.
But that's where companies are going these days.
Well, I say get used to that. I mean, that's not going away anytime soon. The payoff at the end is this, happy couple at a McDonald's. The snow is falling outside. They're enjoying a sandwich and, I don't know, maybe an eggnog shake or something like that. So that's the payoff if you are going through all these stressful situations and the holidays do have you feeling a little bit down and antsy. Well, you go to McDonald's and everything will be okay, right? That's the payoff of the ad. I think if anything that caught people off guard, it's the most terrible time of the year. All right, that catches your attention.
It's kind of catchy.
But I think there is a level of relatability in this whole thing.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people are saying, hey, this looks a lot different than McDonald's campaigns typically. So some people felt...
That's what I like about it.
Yeah, but a lot of people not at all interested in it. I don't mind it. But the whole thing about AI, and that is what has a lot of people in an uproar too over this, it was just last night. We were watching the news, and my husband said, oh, my goodness, this commercial, like right at the bottom, says this ad was generated with AI. I don't know who that one was for, but I said, oh, yeah, it's happening. In some cases, just little spritz. Other cases, it's like the whole ad. Mm.